I'm Mark Bomer from Rhodes Australia, and along with my co-host Michael Kilgareth, it's my great pleasure to welcome you to our very first podcast. As this series unfolds, we're going to cut, slice and dice the big issues in land transport in Australia today, with a particular focus on the infrastructure that underpins it. So today we're joined by Adrian Hart, who's an Associate Director with BIS Oxford Economics and Head of its Construction and Infrastructure Unit here in Australia. Adrian has been an economist for over 20 years and a frequent speaker at our Rhodes Australia events for well over a decade. And that's not just because he knows his stuff inside out, but because he's got that very rare ability to bring clarity and insight to debates on infrastructure planning and spending. So welcome, Adrian, and welcome, Michael.
Thanks, Mike, and congratulations on putting together the first Rhodes Australia podcast. And Adrian, great to have you with us today. So, Adrian, we're seeing unprecedented social and economic upheaval in Australia and around the world as a result of the COVID-19 crisis. So I want to begin by asking you the question that I think is on the minds of everyone, especially those in the transport infrastructure sector. So how is this going to affect the pipeline?
Well, thanks, Michael. Look, I think you're right to say that that word, unprecedented. The first thing to note is just really how unprecedented this shock is, not just to the transport sector, but also the construction industry and the broader economy. Yes, we had a pandemic 100 years ago, and we can learn a bit from that, but the speed of global transmission with COVID-19, the massive response from governments in Australia and around the world, not just in terms of the restrictive policies to slow the spread of the virus, which also slows the economy, but also the magnitude and speed of supportive fiscal and monetary policy. This is all really unprecedented, and we're in a sense in uncharted waters. And with that comes a lot of uncertainty. In the economics profession, we're talking more about a range of scenarios, how deep, how long, potential recovery paths. How long does it take to bounce back, as there is now so much risk attached to any single baseline forecasts? You know, even the forecasts we prepared in early March have been adjusted and readjusted several times as new information has come to light. And that situation just remains incredibly fluid. So with that caveat in mind, and it's a large caveat, I think we can still make some pretty informed comments in terms of the impact on the construction industry and the transport sector particularly, based on our conversations with industry and government and how activity looks to be playing out at this stage. I mean, first of all, you can talk about this in the short term. We are anticipating a substantial negative shock to construction industry in the June quarter, but this is mainly through impacts on private sector building commencements. Most directly impacted by the shock, the demand shock. You're talking here accommodation, aged care, education, retail, offices, entertainment. And this downturn in net overseas migration is also going to impact on the residential building market too. Now, note that the building markets are going to operate slightly differently to the civil markets. There, it's a lot more being driven by the demand shock from having fewer and fewer people. The other issues affecting that market particularly is the productivity challenge. On building projects, and particularly really tall buildings, we've been talking with a lot of builders and we're discovering that there's productivity challenges on some of these big vertical projects because it takes a lot longer through social distancing to get people up and down work sites. But we also anticipate that this productivity challenge is going to impact on civil construction projects as well, meaning that it will take longer for projects to complete and will ultimately likely cost more. Now, finally, when you add to this supply chain risks, you've got a potential here for projects being shifted out. So to summarize all that and to say, well, in transport, I'd say that, look, first of all, the transport sector was already suffering a little bit before COVID-19. We had a really big wave of projects, but it was very highly targeted towards really big mega projects, and we didn't have the range of smaller to mid-sized projects that we probably should have had. We already had a situation where so much risk was being passed on to the industry for delivering those big transport projects. What I would say about COVID-19 is that it's adding further risk now to the point where I'm concerned whether contractors will be able to provide conforming bids for work for new transport projects, as there simply may be too much risk that they cannot price into those projects. So my net feeling about this is that we're looking at that big wave of potential transport projects getting pushed out as we deal with the risks and as we try to, you know, bring a depth to the market so that we can get competitive bids.
So, Adrian, just a follow-up question to that then. As you know, Roads Australia did do a survey a couple of weeks ago of the industry, and one of the issues that we were quite concerned about at the time was pipeline and whether that was actually going to be pushed back. Now, governments in New South Wales and Victoria have been very much on the front foot to reassure the industry and I guess the community generally from an economic perspective that these projects were not only going to be on track, but that when we get to the other side of COVID-19, they were going to go even harder. So to what extent do you think reassurances like that will play into generating a sort of a consumer or an industry confidence in the future of the industry or the future of the pipeline?
Look, I think the pipeline's incredibly important because it's what industry really needs to have some kind of certainty that we have projects going ahead at certain times. That means that they can continue to invest in their workforces, in their businesses, and they know they've got something at the end of the day that is going to pay their bills. I think the challenge will be is in trying to procure these projects. Governments and industry, we have to be a lot more collaborative about it. It's not just the usual risks that we're now dealing with. We're dealing with risks to our workforces, our supply chains, trying to deliver these projects. And I really believe a lot of businesses are struggling to sort of price these risks effectively into the projects. So it's great governments are making the right noises when it comes to sort of saying, yes, we're going to stand behind that pipeline. But they have to talk more collaboratively, I think, in order to really reach out to businesses and say, what do we need to do to make these projects work in a way that, you know, the construction industry will be sustainable.
Thanks very much, Adrian. And that's the message I think that we've been getting from governments in the last few days is that they recognise the importance of collaboration and talking with their contractors. You mentioned the supply chain. How do you think it's going to hold up in the short to medium term?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, a month ago when this really started to break out badly, I was a lot more worried about the potential impact, particularly on the supply of materials for building and construction projects that were either sourced from China or had China as a critical link in the chain. Now, with restrictions sort of easing in China and production increasing, the parts of the industry that I've been talking to, they're starting to get a little bit more positive in that regard, but it is still a moving feast. And I know of several industry associations that continue to actively survey their members on this, and getting that sort of regular feedback is priceless from a policy perspective. Rather than materials, I'd say the bigger risk I see for the supply chain on this revolves around people. It revolves around labour and skills. And a sustainable construction industry requires businesses across the spectrum to stay afloat and people to remain attached to their work. We need subcontractors, the tier twos, the tier threes, to be able to provide the workforces to support the bigger contractors, whether directly on the big projects that form some of the bigger projects in the pipeline, as well as working on smaller and medium-sized projects. And we actually need a lot more of those smaller and medium-sized projects in the market to keep those businesses engaged.
Okay, thanks, Adrian. And look, moving on to a related economic issue, of course, at this time we have historically low interest rates, and of course governments are able to borrow at incredibly low interest rates. We have quantitative easing happening in the economy as well. But over the longer term, of course, there is also the ramification that out of all of the big spending that we're doing at the moment, there does come a payback date. So Given that, how do you think, or where do you think that the money is going to come from to sustain the pipeline over the longer run?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We're going to start thinking about some longer term impacts, I think, that this is going to have, just purely beyond the next one quarter, two quarters, or how long the pandemic really takes place. And really, there's a lot more to this than just that money trail. COVID-19, it's creating this huge cyclical shock for the construction industry at a time when we've all been pushing for flattening the curve when it comes to infrastructure investment. I mean, ideally, we'd prefer not to have these big cycles in investment and construction because of capacity and capability pressures that it brings to industry, and that's well known. But COVID-19 is potentially going to bring a very large cycle with it, whether we like it or not. We are seeing quite a substantial pullback in parts of the construction industry over the next two quarters. But there is a potential for a very strong recovery in 2021 and even in late 2020. And I think this is really going to test the capacity and capability of the industry. We'll need as many businesses as possible to stay solvent over the next 6 months, as well as people attached to jobs in the construction industry to deal with the potential broad-based recovery in housing, non-residential building and civil construction by around 2021 and into 2022. And so without that kind of industry sustainment, the funding for projects might become a bit moot. But if you want to go back to the money equation, look, private investment will only recover once the confidence to invest is there. That's going to vary sector by sector. We know that the monetary policies that have been put into place by the Reserve Bank are keeping debt finance at very cheap rates. And we should be able to fund things through that. And rates should remain cheap for a long time. For governments and public investment generally, I think this whole episode will open up new debates about government revenues and spending across the board. While debt will remain an important source of finance, governments will likely need to take a long, hard look at those serious tax and spending reforms so that we can sustainably fund infrastructure into the future. And this may mean that we halt some of the promised tax cuts and we possibly introduce new taxes that hopefully replace existing inefficient or inequitable taxes.
Adrian, just flowing on from that, we had Premier Andrews the other day saying that, you know, the government will be looking to spend more. But I'm interested to get your views on whether you think that this situation is going to change the long-term spending priorities of government. I mean, infrastructure has been so high on the list of spending priorities. But as we come out of this, could you see other sectors of the economy, like health, claim a larger slice of the pie at the expense of infrastructure?
Well, I certainly hope that we do rethink our long-term priorities. I think it's possible to construct a case that Australia is underinvested across a whole range of infrastructure, whether social or economic infrastructure, for a long time. And when crises hit, that sort of underinvestment tends to get exposed. I think even more, this crisis has the potential to change behaviours, and that has implications for the sort of infrastructure we will need longer term. Once we get to the other side of this, because there is another side, and it's not hopefully too far away, when we get back to that new normal, I suspect that certain behaviours will remain to some extent. We may realise that there are benefits in having a flexibility to work from home. We may not necessarily undertake the previous level of business travel. We may further accelerate our use of telecommunication services, and we may need to invest more in our health and education services and our protocols so that we can better manage future pandemic events and the isolating responses to them. So, I mean, I really hope that crises like these really do act as a catalyst for change and we do rethink some of our long-term spending priorities.
The interesting thing, of course, is that that has ramifications for many of the issues that we're dealing with around congestion pricing or congestion, transport network pricing. This is probably more of a comment than a question to you, Adrian, but it's certainly going to be a very interesting policy discussion coming out of this, where some of the fundamentals and the variables that we're considering, say, or we were considering a couple of months ago, may well have considerably changed in the next couple of months. So I guess it's going to be interesting to come back and have a discussion with you again later in the year to have a look at how some of those fundamentals might have changed.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I suspect that we will revert back to a new normal, but that normal may be a little bit different to what we're used to. And it'd be interesting to track where behaviours have changed because of this.
One interesting aspect, I think, of this, Adrian, is that, you know, in the last couple of weeks, we've all discovered Zoom, and working from home has become, you know, something of the new black. So, you know, you mentioned the new norm. I wonder if things like this will impact on some of the underlying projections that are driving infrastructure planning in Australia at the moment. I'm talking about things like urban congestion and population growth and spread. Do you have a view on that?
Well, certainly when you look outside at the moment, there doesn't appear to be much traffic on the roads, that's for sure. And there probably shouldn't be, you know, except for essential sort of situations. Look, there's a quote going around at the moment which I think is quite apt, and that is that you never let a good crisis go to waste. I think it was attributed to Winston Churchill following World War II, but it was made famous more recently by the former Chicago mayor, Rahm Emanuel, following the 2008 financial crisis. I think this crisis is an opportunity to wholly rethink how we plan, how we procure, how we deliver, how we maintain infrastructure in Australia, because we're already doing a lot of this really badly. We still choose uneconomic projects. We choose the wrong projects. We don't plan well enough for climate change and build that into projects that we're going to need to last for 100 years. We still procure them in ways that make them more expensive than they need to be. And we drive construction contractors to the wall and out of the industry. We drive productivity in the industry back to where it was 30 years ago. And that's a stat. Right now, we've got the same productivity in the industry today as it was back in the late 1990s. And we've got tremendous maintenance challenges and backlogs in so many sectors. So we're not doing a fantastic job on infrastructure already. And I think these sorts of crises, well, it offers us a chance to make a real catalyst change. So you talk about the choice of infrastructure projects. Yes, I think that's one aspect of this that will hopefully improve and change, particularly as we recalibrate to those new behaviours. But I'll hope we just do a lot more things better in the infrastructure space. And, you know, finally, from a health and economics perspective, I hope we use this crisis to better equip ourselves to handle future pandemics. This won't be the last time we have a pandemic. Hopefully, we'll learn enough from this so that the next time we won't have anywhere near the same health and economic costs as we've had to endure for this one.
I'm wondering, you know, whether some states will come out of this better or worse than others in terms of capacity.
It's hard to put on it at the moment. Different states were in different positions going into this crisis, and they're going to come out of it differently. I mean, we had New South Wales and Victoria well ahead of the other states in terms of infrastructure delivery. I think that we're seeing quite a setback to the construction industry across the board over the next two quarters, particularly the next quarter. I mean, the challenge is that really we're heading towards the largest single quarter economic drop in economic activity that we've ever seen. For the June quarter at Oxford Economics, we're expecting a drop in economic growth at a double-digit pace. And we still expect that over 2020 as a whole, an overall decline in economic growth of over 7%. I mean, that's unheard of. Unemployment expected to rise by over 1 million people in the June quarter. An unemployment rate that is likely to be over 13%, which is higher than what we had in the early 1980s and the early 1990s in terms of a recession, and all coming in one big hit. The good news, if I want to put it that way, is in Australia, our government is relatively strongly in good financial shape, whether you're talking the federal government or a range of the state governments. The Reserve Bank has a strong balance sheet. Our banks are well capitalised. And we know that the pandemic will not last forever. There's another side to this, and there's various scenarios that we are actively, you know, looking at as to the depth and duration of this, but they all point to a recovery of various magnitudes in 2021. We could be in a situation in 2021 where on one scenario we've got an economic growth rate of about 5% that year. Under another scenario, we could have economic growth, you know, closer to 9% in 2021 as we bounce back from this. So it's not quite like the GFC, but a lot depends on how well we manage it over the next two quarters, how well we keep businesses alive, and how well we keep people attached to their workforces and their workplaces. And for the construction industry, it means keeping as many people employed in construction as possible and sustained so that when we do come out that other side, we can grow again. Because I suspect, as the Premier of Victoria, you mentioned, said, there'll be a lot more work on the other side of this. The challenge is keeping everybody engaged, so we've got a workforce to deliver it on the other side of this.
All right, Adrian, look, we might wrap it up there. I think there's some, if there is a silver lining to this crisis we're currently in, I think you've touched on a few of the opportunities, both in the short term and the long term, that can help us come through this and be in reasonable shape to go on in the future. So, look, Michael, just before we sign off, you've been speaking with a lot of industry and government leaders in the past 2 weeks. What's the overarching message you're hearing?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we undertook a survey of industry leaders, which really pointed to two outcomes there. And one was an overriding concern about the longer-term pipeline, because, as Adrian pointed out before, you need resources and you need people to continue a longer-term pipeline. The other one was, of course, the ability to keep working through the COVID-19 crisis and be regarded as an essential service. So since then, as I've indicated before, governments have been on the front foot to try and reassure industry on both those points. So I think there has been a bit of a turn in confidence I've certainly picked up over the last few weeks, that people feel that they're able to keep going. There's a pipeline at the end of this that will give them confidence to keep their workforces intact. We'll be conducting another survey next week with a couple of extra questions around industry confidence and issues like that. And we look forward to getting those results out again, perhaps in another week or two.
Okay, well, on that note, I'd like to thank Adrian and Michael for joining us today. If you found this podcast valuable, make sure you like it and share it. And we'll see you next time for another episode of Roadwork. Thank you.